SRN.
1690 AM Riverside, Iowa, and around the world on the Stardust Radio Network. www.stardustradio.com.
Are you looking for an internet radio station with a unique blend of talk radio and an eclectic musical flavor? Join Stardust Radio today at www.stardustradio.com, where talent and technology meet.
What's happening? I'll tell you what. Kent Emmons here. How'd you like to spend a weekend in Branson for only $99? That's right. You and your family can now relax in Branson for only $99 or take the honey for a quick romantic getaway any weekend you choose. This amazing vacation offer includes 3 days, 2 nights in a great hotel, breakfast every morning of your stay, preferred show tickets, and hundreds of dollars in coupon savings all around town. You know, Branson, Missouri's got amusement parks, world-class golfing, beautiful lakes, endless shopping, and more live shows than Vegas. So give us a call now at 1-866-338-1410. Branson for $99. It's our way of saying thanks for checking out our beautiful new resort, the Grand Crown. Here's that number again, 1-866-338-1410. Toll free, 1-866-338-1410. Branson for $99.
Alexis Parkin, your aviation destination.
You need something grand, something special, something unique. Look no further than the Alexis Park Inn of Iowa City. There you'll find 27 supersized suites of all varieties, most with jacuzzis. The Alexis Park Inn is an aviation-themed hotel where your continental breakfast is delivered right to your door because they're committed to your satisfaction. Give the Alexis Park Inn a call toll-free at 888-9-ALEXIS or check out alexisparkinn.com.
Alexis Park Inn, your aviation destination. Alexis Park Inn.
Climate change could affect our way of life. Reduce your greenhouse gas emissions and help control climate change. Visit www.vcr-mvr.ca. Brought to you by the Voluntary Challenge and Registry, Climate Change Central, and this radio station.
And now live from Riverside, Iowa, the future birthplace of Captain James T. Kirk of the USS Enterprise. Another episode of Wake Up USA, a UFO study. Your host this evening, Joe Montaldo.
Gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust Radio production, now being broadcasted live on SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa. Hope everybody's having a great day, great afternoon, great morning, great evening, depending on where you are and you're listening to us at. Now that I know we're out to, Jeff, I think it's 72, 70, I don't know, we're way up there in countries these days, and I'm just kind of, you know, want to cover everybody, because I know y'all are out there listening, and I appreciate the people who listen to us early in the morning and late at night. I just want to say thanks, guys, because, you know, hey, that's why we do it. A couple things, ladies and gentlemen, then I'm going to hand over the segment. Well, Darrell Williams is going to be doing a segment on the conference for us in a few minutes, but before I do this, a couple things I wanted to talk about. David, who's our state director in Arizona, sent me a thing on the Russian space station today. Now, I had heard some stuff about this off, kind of, you know, here and there, bouncing around. The thing about it is, I sat down and read it. You know, it does sound like a good idea. I do like the idea of this. Of course, I think the U.S. needs to do something or have something involved, some involvement in it. I actually didn't know that they were taking down Independence in 2015. That was news. I thought it was actually going to actually come down in 2012. So, anyway, that's kind of news. That was nice to know they're staying out there. But, you know, I got to thinking about this. Is this going to be a joint American-Russian space venture, or is this going to be a joint Russian-Chinese space venture? I'm just curious, and you know, ladies and gentlemen, I'd just like to know your reactions on that, and what do you think it should be? And you can reach me at iClarkCox.net. One other thing, and then I'm going to let Darrell hit the mic. A couple of things on Mars have been bothering lately. I know about a year ago I had told y'all about some photographs taken on Mars that shows what I guess you would call UFOs, classic UFOs at that. A couple of them looked like silver discs taking off in an upward motion, caught by the rover cams. Two on one and one on the other one, but they're very interesting photos. Well, recently I had seen some photos a friend of mine from Australia sent me a couple of days ago. And the thing about them, they're the same photos, but it seems like off in the distance, they enhance the photo somewhat. It looks like off in the distance there's something else there. It's hard to explain. I have to show y'all, but it looks like something not naturally occurring, maybe a building of some type. You can catch it. It's casting a shadow, and that's what caught their eye originally, and then they ran a couple of programs on it, and it looks like a building. I don't know if it is or if it isn't. It was very interesting to see. As soon as they tell me I can publish the photos, I'll publish the photos. But, you know, it's copyright, so they have to give me permission to do that. But on that note, Daryl, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Yes, JoJo.
How you been lately, Daryl? Has it been going good? How did you enjoy the conference?
I'm fine, and I had a wonderful time at the conference. And thank you for having me on. The first person I want to thank is Therese. She's also called PRMT-137. She's from Massachusetts, and she had to care for her mother and wasn't able to make it, and she sponsored me instead.
Hey, Therese, Therese is a hard worker for us. But on that note, Daryl, I'm going to hand the mic over to you, so go ahead.
Okay. Well, as you know, I'm an ICAR member, and I'm a lifetime member of the Alien UFO Ghost Research Society. But I went there mostly just as an individual, and although I was saying that I was there as an ICAR member too, there were many, many guests there, but two of them were my favorites. That was Michael Sala and Robert McNichol. And but the first thing I want to get into before I mention what they said or what they shared was I thought it was very important for me to learn at the site how important it is for human beings to practice a lifestyle of maintaining an open heart. And I think that was the most important benefit that I gained from my attendance. And the enlightened beings that James and the people there at the sanctuary and ECTI have been experiencing or having contact with, the most important quality or character that the enlightened beings look for is for people to have the open heart and for people to send love upwards to them as our brothers and sisters and to embrace everyone around the world with including them in any peace that we send. And I also learned that it's really important for humor to be used to cope with life events, and that helps people lighten up and to be able to laugh at things. I have learned in the past that humor was important, but this is the first time it really sank home. And so I just based on that alone, I just value the experience and consider it a life-altering, a life-changing experience that contributed to basically to saving my life because of having been so caught up in so many serious projects and things. But going on to the two guests that were my favorite, Michael Sala, he said in 1961, when the Drake equation was originally popularized, it was based on an assessment that there were two intelligent species that co-developed on Earth, Homo sapiens, a land-based species, and cetaceans, a water-based species. And anyone who likes dolphins, I think, will appreciate that. And Michael Sala also mentioned the Declaration of Peaceful Relations with Extraterrestrial Civilizations that was produced among the participants of the Hawaii conference last year. And information on that is at etworldpeace.com. And Robert McNichol was the one, he's the one who brought the Star Dreams crop circle movie, which we all watched. And I used to think that crop circles were a form of vandalism to the fields, not just, you know, that they were beautiful and so forth, but I used to think that the farmers were losing something. But what Robert McNichol mentioned was in the UK, where these fields of grains have these the real crop circles where there are energy changes in them and all that, they eventually have harvested all these fields, which I wasn't aware of, and he said that the energies have been imparted to the grains, which are now in the human food chain, in everything from bread to pasta to beer. And I think that is absolutely wonderful, because not only did they have evidence that there were some form of contact with other world beings Now, the consequence of that contact is now contributing to people all around the UK and even in different parts of the world. I thought that was so interesting because I'd never heard of that before. And one of the things about the site is there's an energy vortex on it, and I used to sit on the fence about energy vortexes, but I saw this with my own eyes when I was driving to the site. I was looking directly across the site at Mount Adams, and it looked to me like Mount Adams was magnified two or three times its normal size. And when I got to the site and looked over the edge on the opposite side of the site, I could see Mount Adams as it was very far away. Not very far away, but it wasn't an optical illusion either. They described that they mentioned that in the sanctuary about that there's a vortex and people have seen that. And I went and found the person who I carpooled and brought with me to the site, and a young man from Portland by the name of Bowen Paris asked me to bring him. And sure enough, he had seen the same exact, the same sight of seeing Mount Adams as it was magnified through a lens. I thought that was the most amazing thing because it certainly was something that I was able to see with my own eyes, and I was able to completely understand. And I had the best sleep, two nights of sleep that I've ever had in 30 years. It was incredible. It was so peaceful, and the energy around the site was just magnificent. It's amazing. And also, when that Star Dreams Crop Circle movie was playing, there was a few people that were outside who were treated with a visit of two giant UFOs, ET craft, which showed up over the building, and they were hovering directly over the building outside while everyone else was inside. I think there were less than 20 people outside. But later on that night, I got to see one of the ships powering up before it went into hyperdrive or whatever it's called, hyperspace. And it was like a miniature orange, reddish, yellowish supernova. It was just amazing to see them when they powered up. And then I could see the ship just before it powered up, and then I saw it just disappeared. And it wasn't even visible after that. And there were many, many orbed pictures that were made with digital cameras out in the fields while people were watching for the ships at nighttime. And there was a slideshow the next morning showing all these pictures of all these orbs, many different colors of orbs. And in one of the pictures, it showed a green orb hovering directly right above my head, about 6 inches above my head. And I thought that was interesting because someone was just in passing describing the slides, and they said, "Oh, and there's a healing master orb," or something to that effect. And one of my areas of interest for many, many years has been in healing, alternative healing, and building machines or technology that can help people to facilitate their healings. And anyway, I just found that was it was actually the most incredible experience. The people I talked with, even the speakers, they were accessible. I could walk up to the speakers when they were not on the platform, on the stage, and carry on a conversation with them at any time I wanted to during the conference. And they were very intelligent, very interesting, every single guest speaker that I talked with. But those, like I said, were the two that I mentioned were my most favorite. Jojo, that's basically...
That's everything.
All of my notes that I have.
Let me ask you one quick question. I know we've got to get the guest on in a second, but let me ask you a quick question. I had seen quite a few, too. I've seen over 75 UFO reports from that area during the conference, and I was just curious, did they mention that during the conference, or...?
About the reports?
In the area of the conference, of the weekend of the conference, and I was just kind of curious if anybody had said anything during the conference, if anybody had said anything.
Well, during the conference, there were numerous reported sightings, usually at nighttime. I saw, it's hard for me to say, because we saw so many satellites, and they know when the satellites are going overhead because they have a log of all that, and they say, well, at any time we should be seeing the ISS or this satellite or that satellite, and we've watched so many of them going overhead. Because, like, out there you can see practically everything that goes on overhead. It's just all the stars practically just poke out right at you. But, yeah, there were all kinds of reportings of things. Well, I would look up and I'd see something moving, but it looked to me like a satellite that was just changing course or something, because of how high up it was. But supposedly, during the crop circle film, there were several people, many people that got to see two of them at the same time. And yeah, those were reported during the event. They, because a lot of people were interested in hearing that sort of thing too. But one of the things that the enlightened beings that visit them say is that they're not really interested in seeing people who just want to see the ET encounter. They want to meet and talk with or relate with or communicate with people who have an open heart and especially people that have a concern for, you know.
Well, yeah, I know what you're saying. But anyway, thanks for doing it for me. I'm glad you enjoyed yourself. I sound like Stuffy. I personally wish that I could catch every conference. I really do. Maybe one day I'll get lucky and find somebody to fund me so I can go around and just attend conferences. But meanwhile, ladies and gentlemen, I have to go to work and have a job like the rest of us. Unfortunately, I really do. But again, Daryl, thanks, man, for taking care. That was Daryl Wilson, guys.
Williams.
But on that note, guys, I know we're getting ready to bring the guests on. You know, there's just been a couple of things floating around, like that conference and the sightings. You know, it had gone flat for a while as far as sightings were going. And then now what I'm seeing, it's like it's trying to start back up. There's spurts of them. The other day I was reading something. I'm a member of New Horizons out of Gulf Breeze, Florida. And I get a letter from them the other day, and there's been 111 sightings along the lower Gulf Coast region and the Panhandle in the last 2 weeks, which is probably about 50 times what they normally see. I mean, there's pretty regular sightings down there, but there's a lot of military stuff down there as well. You know, last time I had talked to Jaime Masson, he was telling me about the same thing going on in Mexico and South America, spurts. Right now, he's traveling around the U.S. Giving these lectures to Spanish-speaking community, by the way. So you want to catch them, but they're definitely geared to the Spanish-speaking community, not the English community. So bring a translator. He said he's willing to talk to anybody after the shows in English, but the shows are geared to Spanish-speaking. So I want to warn you before you go in case you don't speak Spanish. You know, a lot of the video is going to be really good. Some of it's going to be suspect. I like Jaime Masson, and I have told this to his face. I think some of the video is either fraudulent or fake. I don't think he did it. Okay, don't take it the wrong way. I just think that it's not what it appears to be. And he even agreed that some of it is definitely suspect that they're looking at. So it's nice. I mean, and we had talked about this when he was on the show last time, and he'll be back probably around Christmas, I think, or maybe later. But it's just one of those things that, you know, I felt the need to bring up and let y'all know about. And, you know, and that, and where else? There was somewhere just, oh, New York City. I was talking to a friend of mine up there about 3 days ago. They're in Buffalo now. They had been staying in New York for about the last month going to school. And what was weird about it is they were telling me when they were at school, people were telling them about sightings that they were seeing, like on their drives to school in the morning, on their drives in the school in the evenings. I did check out the local reporting sites. I found about 25 or 30 sightings up there, but they were telling me that more than 30 people told them that. So that's kind of weird. It's one of those things that I'm kind of wondering about. What's up? Who's up? What's going on with that? A couple other things that, you know, I've been kind of interested in lately besides the amount of sightings. You know, we had talked about abductions had seemed to take a slowdown. That's not the correct word. It's not that they actually took a slowdown. It's like the contactees who have worked through this and are steady in what they're doing, basically they seem to be having a different style of contact. And so, you know, they definitely seem to be having a different style of contact than the other ones have been. New abduction reports are actually down for the last 3 or 4 months, with the exception of male abduction reports. Those are up about 75%. I have no idea what that's about. I have been asking a lot of ufologists over the last 6 months their male-female ratio in cases, and theirs is pretty much the same as ours, about 70-30. And I've also been asking them how many new male cases have they been receiving this year. They're telling me that on average, it's pretty much the same. So I'm not exactly sure why, as our court, as an organization, is having so much of a much more of an influx than anybody else's with male abductees. Maybe they feel more comfortable. Maybe they know that I'm a contactee and I'm willing to speak about it. Maybe that's enough. They also know there's several other male in this organization that speak about this. And yes, we still have careers. We still take care of our families and we still have lives. So maybe that is why they're doing it. I'm not sure, to be honest with you, ladies and gentlemen, but there's a marked increase in males coming forward with abduction cases. Some of them quite interesting, some of them quite scary, some of them quite pleasant and peaceful. There's been a realm of new contact experiences lately, so it's been very interesting. But Jeff informed us that the guest is in a queue, so Preston, can you hear me?
I can.
Ladies and gentlemen, Preston Dennett, did I pronounce your last name correctly?
Dennett, actually.
All right, Dennett, thank you. Well, no, I'll correct it now before we even get started. So it's Preston Dennett, ladies and gentlemen. A couple of quick things for you. What I'd like you to do at first is just tell the audience a little bit about yourself, why you're involved in this, and then we'll start the interview from there. So go ahead, Preston.
Okay. Well, I actually used to be very skeptical of UFOs. It was in 1986 when I began investigating the phenomena. I heard a report on the news about a sighting over Alaska. It was actually a really famous sighting, but I didn't believe it, not for a second. But I made kind of the mistake of asking everyone I knew about UFOs. And that's when I got a real shock, because I found out that my brother had seen a UFO. My sister-in-law, she saw UFOs with her friends and actually had a face-to-face encounter with your typical gray-type ET. And I asked people at work. Two of them had missing time encounters. I had a friend who had a missing time encounter. So, I mean, I just started reading books at that point and interviewing people and going to the landing sites, and then I started writing, and just one thing led to another. So
I wish I could write. Oh, go ahead. I didn't mean to stop you. Go ahead.
No, it's taken over my life. I love it. Don't get me wrong. But, I'm just obsessed with this subject for some reason.
You know, if I could get a dollar for everybody I've interviewed that's told me that, I could retire, ladies and gentlemen. Really. No, myself included. I'm not trying to give you a hard time, Preston, because, I mean, for me, I started out 23 years ago pretty much the way you did, very skeptical, knowing that these people were absolutely insane. And here I am 23 years later doing this. So, and it's I couldn't call it a hobby. I'd have to call it, maybe an obsession is too strong of a word, but it's one of them things. It's definitely taken over my life. When did you start getting speaking publicly about this?
Well, let me see, it was about 1996, I believe, after I wrote my first book, UFO Healings, which is actually outlines over 100 cases of people who have had physiological improvement as a result of their close encounter with a UFO.
What did you say, improvement?
Yeah, a healing, a cure of all kinds of diseases and illnesses, everything from colds to cancer, honestly.
Oh, no, I've documented a few of those myself. I'll tell you about a quick case. We've got a couple minutes for the break. I'll tell you about a quick case, two cases in California, actually. I had met a lady about 12 years ago, stage 4 cancer. If anybody knows stage 4 cancer, that's terminal. There is no hope. She told me about another one of her friends, pretty much in the same shape. Both of them, you know, they showed us the information. I was back with MUFON then. They proved what they had and all. The interesting thing about it is both of them reported being abducted one night. You know,
right.
And you know, people, when you say, oh, I was abducted by aliens, well, she went and told her doctor, no cancer, no remission. This wasn't remission. This was no cancer. And pretty much most of their cell count and electrolyte count and everything else was pretty much normal. Doctors are still baffled. They've never had any problems to this day. You know, and I've heard of things much smaller than that. But I've also heard on a flip side, Preston, I don't know if you've run into this or not, but I've also heard of people experiencing health problems as well from this.
Absolutely, that's absolutely true. I think there's like 400 recorded cases of injuries at least, and about 200 healings. So, absolutely.
It's interesting to see how all this works out. I mean, it really is. You know, I've been doing this. We specialize, the organization I work for actually specializes in abduction research. And I know from the time I make people mad because they always feel like I don't think UFOs are important. But it's not that I don't think they're important. I mean, unless it's a landing or it's some kind of something incredible, it's a UFO. And it's not going to do me any good for the research I'm doing. And I've seen a lot of UFOs. It just, I don't know. I guess I'm not easily impressed these days. Have you ever seen one up close and personal yourself, Preston?
Not until I started doing the research. I never saw anything growing up, but after I started associating closely with some of these abductees, absolutely. One lady, she told me she was seeing UFOs all the time and having contact with these gray-type ETs, and I told her, I want to see these guys. I want to see a UFO. And she said she got a telepathic message to show up at this certain place at a certain time. Now, this is just along the freeway here in Southern California in Pasadena. Along the 210 freeway, there's a little hill, and that's where she said to go. So we both went up there, and I brought my brother and my sister-in-law, and no sooner had we gotten to the top of the hill when this giant, gosh, I don't know how to describe it, a sphere of golden light appeared to our right. It was just maybe 50 feet away, 50 feet up off the ground, and it was huge, the size of a house, really beautiful, obviously nothing that is easily explained, I mean. And it just kind of scooted around the hill and disappeared really fast, moved away really fast.
And I guess that's part of being a researcher in this field, if you meet the right people. And I guess if your motives are pure, you'll have an experience. That's the easiest way I can say it. But on that note, ladies and gentlemen, we got to take a quick break. So I want everyone to please stay tuned to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust Radio production. Now being broadcasted live on SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa, and we'll be right back, so please stay tuned.
SRN
1690 AM, Riverside, Iowa, and around the world on the Stardust Radio Network. www.stardustradio.com.
Are you looking for an internet radio station with a unique blend of talk radio and an eclectic musical flavor? Join Stardust Radio today at www.stardustradio.com, where talent and technology meet.
Quicken Loans knows when your mortgage payment is too big, it follows you everywhere.
Hey guys, where are we going?
Hi, Big Mortgage.
Dad and I are going car shopping.
Not without me.
Oh, for Pete's sake.
A mortgage payment that's too big can drive every financial decision you make.
Scooch over, little man. The Big Mortgage is your dad's constant companion.
Dad, the Big Mortgage is squishing me.
I'd really like to get a bigger car.
The Big Mo says no.
Don't let your big mortgage payment push you around. Pick up the phone and let Quicken Loans show you how to lower your payment up to 33%. That's a third off your payment. Call 800-928-5199. Quicken Loans makes it fast and easy to say goodbye to your big mortgage payment.
You're not the boss of us.
R2.
Or not.
R2.
Or not.
R2.
Am I going to have to separate you two?
Call Quicken Loans at 800-928-5199 today. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. Call Quicken Loans at 800-928-5199.
Alexis Parkin, your aviation destination.
You need something grand, something special, something unique. Look no further than the Alexis Park Inn of Iowa City. There you'll find 27 supersized suites of all varieties, most with jacuzzis. The Alexis Park Inn is an aviation-themed hotel where your continental breakfast is delivered right to your door because they're committed to your satisfaction. Give the Alexis Park Inn a call toll-free at 888-9-ALEXIS or check out alexisparkinn.com.
Alexis Park Inn, your aviation destination, Alexis Park Inn.
Have you always wanted to know the truth about things like UFOs, underground bases, Area 51, the Great Pyramid at Giza, and the Roswell incident of 1947? If so, look no further than Dennis Ballfaser's cutting-edge research. There's no woo-woo factor here, folks, just the facts as he researched them. Dennis's lectures are available on video and audio cassette. For more information and free access to Dennis's research, visit his website, www.truthseekeratroswell.com. That's truthseekeratroswell.com. The truth is here.
SRN
1690 AM, Riverside, Iowa, and around the world on the Stardust Radio Network. www.stardustradio.com.
Well, Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust Radio production, now being broadcasted live on SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa. Hope everybody's been enjoying the show. Remember, too, if you'd like to call in, instead of using the virtual auditorium, you can reach us at 1-877-213-4329. Again, 1-877-213-4329. Or you can always join us in the PowerPoint virtual auditorium, whichever you feel comfortable with. Doesn't matter to me. Preston, welcome back. Sorry about that little short intro before we got you going here. Couple of quick questions for you. First off, I see, man, I was reading the research on you today. I see you've done quite a few books. So I'm going to ask you right off, what is your favorite and least favorite, and what do you think is the most accurate one out of them? I'm putting you on the spot, but...
Well, I'm hoping that they're all pretty accurate.
Okay.
My favorite... probably is a UFOs over Topanga, because that's where I actually grew up, and it's the story of this amazing UFO wave, which began on June 14th, 1992, and continued for 2 years. So it was a really intense investigation. I had to interview, you know, hundreds of people, the police. I connected with them. They referred me cases. So it was a really wild ride for 2 years there.
Yeah, I can imagine. Anytime you get involved in a lot of cases and with a lot of research, it always seems to be. And, you know, it has a lot to do with how much help you have as well, too. When I first started doing this, I had hardly no help. These days, I actually got a lot of help, so it makes my job a lot easier. It's just easier to cover a lot more material when you have a lot more eyes and hands on it. It just seems like you can get a lot more accomplished. We've reviewed so many cases now that it gets kind of eerily scary with some of the things we come up with, but... Now, let me ask you this. I mean, what are you specializing in? Or are you just kind of investigating?
Well, you know, I started out, my first book that I actually wrote was 1 in 40, The UFO Epidemic, which covers all kinds of UFO encounters, so I never really specialized. But I'm mostly interested in, of course, the abduction phenomena or onboard UFO experiences, because I think that's where there's a lot of pay dirt. That's where the information is.
I would have to agree with that. I mean, that's, you know, there's a lot of things we've been doing over the years with dealing with contactees. I mean, we actually have online support groups, actually very large online support groups these days. But, I mean, to me, that is the place to get the most information. But I'm going to let the guests get in. I mean, the guests. I'm going to let the audience get in here in a few minutes and ask you a couple of questions. But let me ask you something right quick. For you, I mean, is this a rewarding thing for you?
It is absolutely rewarding. It's fascinating to hear these people's stories. It's like science fiction come true. My mind is blown every time I hear these people telling me about, you know, how they've been taken on board these craft. Or I've talked to people who worked for, I guess you would call it the secret government or stuff like this. So there's a whole UFO cover-up going on, which is another really exciting aspect of research,
That reminds me of something, Preston. Just a couple of things. Now, maybe you can help me with this. I've been doing this a long time myself, and I started speaking publicly about this probably 96, 97, been doing the show for the last couple of years. But I noticed that the more I get out in the public, the more tidbits, the more deep throats, the more military or government people that seem to take an interest in me. Has that happened to you?
I've been contacted by people who want to tell their stories, yes. I haven't really had much interference in a negative way. I've had some mail that seems to come opened. A lot of my UFO mail would come back opened. I actually pointed this out to people, you know, to
That's common.
See that I wasn't imagining it. And I see some phone interference, but I couldn't really say for sure.
Well, no, what I meant was this wasn't a negative thing for me so much as it was that all of a sudden there was a lot more people in positions of authority that had information for me. You know, before that I was always scratching and biting and fighting, trying to find somebody in the government. You know, I had met a few people over the years because I was in the military, but I was, you know, just scratching, biting and fighting, trying to get some good connections, and it seemed like once I started the online support group, I instantly met like three in the government. And since I took over Wake Up USA, probably another six or seven. And now you know, you can only trust these people so much, and some of them you can't trust at all, I'm going to be honest with you, but they do come up with some of the most interesting things. And what I find interesting is I'll be doing a certain line of research on abductees or contactees, and I'll get a phone call or I'll get a message or even a letter sometimes, and it'll just correlate with all these contactees have been telling me, and this is, you know, one of my connections. I'm like, what the hell? And how the hell you knew I was doing this? You know, because I really don't believe in coincidences, so I have to kind of stop and wonder, you know, what's going on there. And I've talked to a lot of UFO researchers now, pretty much everybody in the field I've pretty much done an interview with these days. And, you know, some of them seem to have interesting contacts. There's been a few that have had negative contacts. I mean, the only time I've ever had what I would consider a negative contact is when I've been warned twice about talking about alien agendas on the radio. That's the only place I've ever been warned about it. Apparently, they just don't want us yapping away. I don't have no idea why. But with the exception of that, most of the contacts I've had have been information-related. I wouldn't say they were good or bad. I would say they were information-related. That's why I was curious to see if you yourself had gotten, if it had made it any easier for you to get information after you had started writing these books and got more into the public eye.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, every time I do a book signing, people come up to me wanting to tell me their stories, pretty much every time. And I have kind of a lot of people at my work where I work as a bookkeeper. And there's not a huge turnover, but a lot of people there have given me stories, a lot of friends. I have a whole network at this point.
Yeah. You ever notice that just seems to grow on its own? The more research you do, the more people you seem to meet, and the more people that either you take an interest in or they take an interest in you. But it does seem to just grow. It's strange. We actually call them core groups now because we find over the years, we find core groups. It'll be like a couple of centered people with, it's like a wheel with interlocking wheels in it. It seems like you've got a wheel with a couple people, then there'll be 10 around them and another 20 around those and so on until it gets out to 50 or 100. But it's weird. And we've seen this a lot over the years, but you know, we've got way more abduction cases than probably any five researchers combined. We've been very fortunate in that area. There's somebody else I wanted to ask you. Hey guys, I'm gonna let y'all ask him some questions in a few minutes. I've got one more thing I want to ask him, and then, you know, I'll let y'all start asking some questions. You know Melinda Leslie, don't you?
Oh, I do. She's actually got a chapter in one of my books.
Yeah, that's what I heard. And you know, I love Melinda. I know she's not always the most well received in ufology, but you know, she's been on the show many times, and we get into some really wild discussions about military abductions and things like that. But what I wanted to ask you personally, what did you think about her?
Oh, I was actually really impressed. You know, I've seen her lecture, and she was able to recall details about some of the military presence that was on board, I mean, during her experiences, that she was able to later verify. And I was really impressed with her. I thought she had an amazing account, and she's got a lot of eyewitnesses to her stuff. It's not just her who's, you know, recording her experiences. She has corroborating evidence. So, yeah, I'm impressed.
Well, I think she's great. I love her. I know for some reason that ufology's weird. I guess they just don't like people who mess in the government fields. But, you know, we've had a lot of very interesting discussions, including, the first time I brought her on the show was to talk about her own experience. And then after that, she's been on a couple of times to talk about research, and I brought on with, like, Leah Haley to discuss things like that. But I guess what we're going to do, Preston, I see that you have several hands up in the queue, so you ready for some questions?
Sure.
All right, let's see who we got first. Let's see, D-Dragon's been patiently waiting, so D, why don't you come up, give us your first name and location, and you're live and on the air with Preston. I don't know what's up. I don't hear anything. D, apparently you are having some kind of weird trouble there. See if you can fix it. Put your hand back up. We'll let you ask again. You know, you just got to get back in the queue. Who we got next? Joe from Florida. Well, I was going to say, you know, tell us your first name and location, but Joe from Florida, why don't you come ask Preston a question? You're live and on the air.
Hello, Preston Bennett. My question is this. I read an excerpt from your book, UFO Healings, and you give several case studies on people who have been healed. I'm wondering, what is the intent of healing by the UFOs? Are they demonstrating that they can, or is it just experimenting on their part? Thank you.
Go ahead, Preston.
Yeah, that's a great question. Why are these ETs healing? That's really the million-dollar question, because, I mean, we have one case where a UFO hovered over a boy who had a head cold. It shined on a beam of light on him, and it cured his head cold. And why a UFO would travel light years to cure somebody of a cold is beyond me. But, you know, I have to tell you, I let the witnesses speak for themselves. And I would say about half of the people who have been healed feel that it was a benevolent action on the part of the ETs. But the other half don't feel that way. They feel that the aliens are just sort of doing what David Jacobs calls equipment maintenance. But you get the whole range. You know, I do believe that ETs are a lot like people. Some are friendly, some are not so friendly. I mean, I couldn't convince anyone humanity is a benevolent race, so I'm not going to try and convince anyone that ETs are.
Sorry, Jay, I like the way you said, Preston, I like the way you said that. I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen, I have to agree with him there. We could argue all day long that we were benevolent, but I think actions speak louder than words on that one. What do you think, Preston?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But I agree with you as far as the gamut. When I talk to contactees or abductees, and I'm going to do this, ladies and gentlemen, because I know someone's going to send me something here about this in a minute, but basically, to me, an abductee is someone who's abducted. They're really not all that self-aware about it. A lot of times they're not even aware about it. A contactee is somebody who's actually come to terms with this and is having a contact experience, not an abduction experience, which is much different. But anyway, on that note, we're going to grab some more quick questions. So who we got next? I see we got TRMT137 up. Oh, well, hold on, TRMT. I apologize. I see we have D from Arizona on the line. D, can you hear me?
Yes, Joe.
D, you have a question for us this evening.
Yes, I do. Good evening, Mr. Dennett. I'm Dee Andrew. I'm the Southwest Regional Director for ICAR out of Arizona. Here recently, my husband and I caught an episode of UFO Files where you and other researchers were talking about underwater unidentified objects, and was in hopes that maybe you can give us a bit of an update from, you know, when the show is aired. Thank you.
Go ahead, Preston.
Yeah, that's right. I've been doing a lot of research on underwater UFOs right here off the Southern California coast, and the History Channel interviewed me for hours, but only aired really about a few minutes of what I told them. There's literally, I would say, 50 or 100 cases of UFOs moving under the water here, right off the Southern California coast between Santa Barbara and Long Beach, sort of the Santa Catalina Channel. And the reports stretch back to the 1940s and continue today. I've been getting a bunch of recent reports because of an article I wrote in Fate magazine and because of the show that I on the History Channel. So yeah, I think there's a huge base underneath there. I have one case where people, this was during the wave over Topanga Canyon, which is right in that area. I have a case where people saw 200 UFOs on one night, and they were all coming from below, from this area, not from above. So I think they were coming from this base. And I've got several cases, actually, of abductions of people who were taken not into a UFO, but into an underground base, and it's often in the same area. So, yeah, I'm convinced there's this giant underwater base. I would imagine it's, you know, a mile or more in size. Yeah, I'm still receiving cases about it. There was a recent one of someone who saw a UFO come flying out of the water there right off the coast. So it's a very interesting case.
Where was this, Preston? I must have missed where y'all said it was or something.
It's off the coast of Los Angeles, really. Malibu, Topanga, Santa Monica, that whole area. Stretching north from about Santa Barbara, south down to Long Beach, Palos Verdes. That whole area, the Santa Catalina Channel.
Okay. I just must have had missed when you said it or just missed part of that. I don't know. Sorry about that. No, I was just curious. I mean, what was California sightings last year? What, 3,700, I think, were reported in California last year? course, you know, what is there, 40 million people living there, too. So, I mean, that's probably why. But right now, with the exception of New York City itself, California probably has more sightings anywhere.
Oh, yeah. My book, UFOs Over California, tells a complete history. And California leads the nation by, with twice as much as any other state. The second is Washington, and Texas is third.
But see, what's funny is if you go by cities, New York probably has more sightings per city than any other city. So I found that interesting. So the majority of the sightings in that state must happen in that city. See, in California, it seems to be spread out. I mean, you get from San Diego all the way up to the northern. Actually, I noticed Northern California, which seems to be less populated, seems to have some pretty interesting sightings. And then what did y'all have? Sonora just recently. Not just recently, over what the last 2 years have seen, they had a rash of sightings. I don't know, it's just they like, but you know, I have to say this too. I've noticed over the years of doing this research that UFOs tend to like deep water areas. Think about it, we're talking about the West Coast, California, Oregon, and Washington. All three are very high in sightings. You think about the Gulf Coast, all the states along the Gulf Coast, with the exception of Louisiana, have enormous amount of sightings. Then you go up the East Coast, and basically that's what you're seeing, Florida up the East Coast, the Carolinas, the Virginias, all the way up into New York, and those areas seem to be higher than the areas in the heartland, except along the Mississippi River Valley. Places like St. Louis have a lot of sightings. Apparently E.T. just likes deep water, and I'm figuring they use it to hide. I'm sure in some locations they have bases, but if they're not a stealth-capable ship, I would think they would just run them underwater, at least if it was deep enough. What do you think, Preston?
Oh, I agree. I think that they're just taking advantage of their technology. They can travel underwater, high speeds, you know, hundreds of miles per hour. It's very, very easy for them to hide, and, of course, most of the Earth is covered with water, so why wouldn't they?
Well, one of the wildest things we ever seen was in, where was it, Gulf Breeze, Florida. They had... They go out on the fishing pier out there. Well, now they can't since Katrina, but they used to have an old bridge that they converted to a fishing pier. You can go out there. They'd, some nights you'd go out there, they had skywatch groups out there. You'd see sometimes 200, 300, 400 people. There was one particular night, the mayor, the police chief, a bunch of people were out there videotaping on the bridge, and you seen this green glow coming off out of the back bay, probably about a mile you could see it, and it was under the water. You watch the thing as it approached the thing. It was just a green glowing light kind of pulsating. It went under the bridge, under the where the channel is, went through the channel, went past the railroad trestle, through the channel, went out about 100 yards past the trestle and the power lines, and just floated up out of the water. Sat there for a few minutes, some goldish, sparkly, orby-looking things kind of came out the bottom, and then it just disappeared. I don't mean it flew off or anything, it just disappeared like a doorway opening and closing. And there was plus 400 witnesses to that sighting. I think even part of that made it on Untold Mysteries or somewhere. I remember seeing it somewhere. Or it might have been on Sightings for that matter, but it was very, very interesting. Yeah, we do a lot of research down in Gulf Breeze. That is a wild place for UFOs. You ought to check that out if you ever get a chance to get on the East Coast. There is some weird stuff goes on there, Preston. I mean, some really weird stuff. And you have NASA bases. What's weird down here, most people don't realize this, but from Houston, pretty much all across the Gulf Coast and even down the panhandle going into lower Florida, NASA pretty much owns the Gulf Coast. Some of these bases are so big that they're actually, Stennis. Stennis engulfed four cities when they took it over. This is where they test the rocket engines at. They actually took over four small cities to create this base. This thing is just huge. And it's weird, these black, have you ever done any research on the black triangles, Preston?
I've talked to some people who've had some black triangle encounters, absolutely, but not extensively.
The reason I was asking is there seems to be a consensus in ufology, whether or not it's right or wrong, I don't really know, but they seem, the small ones seem, everybody seems to think are government, and that's mainly, the TR-3Bs. They seem to show up in places like along the Gulf Coast testing corridor, Colorado, New Mexico, Arizona, which are all testing corridors for experimental aircraft for the U.S. military. And then they're being seen in other places besides that, but that seemed to be where the majority were for the first 8 or 9 years. And everyone seems to have a consensus that those belong to us. But then there's these ones they describe like 400 yards by 400 yards. by 400 yards and then 400 yards thick, we don't have the ability to build anything that big and get it up in the air. I don't know, but there's been numerous reports of these, and there's even been several mass sightings of these in, what, five different countries now. I'd like to know what is the Belgium sighting. When the mayor was standing outside, he said the thing was so big that it basically covered the entire town as it went over. So these things are huge. I would definitely not think those were. But that's why I wanted to ask, because I didn't know if you were familiar with it and which way everybody was going with this. It's weird how they come to these conclusions.
Right. You know, I know about those. I mean, Hudson Valley, Belgium, and, of course, there's a bunch of sightings over here. I can't see that they would be ours if they're hovering this low over very populated areas.
I don't even know why they would. It's just crazy. You know what? We got about 7 minutes before the break. Let's see if we can slip in one more question here. Who do we have up? Dimensional Star. Dimensional Star, why don't you come up, give us your first name and location, and you're live on air with Preston Dennett.
Hello, Preston. My name is November, and I'm from Oregon, and I have two questions. My first question is, I was looking at your website, and you have a book called Out of Body Exploring, and I wanted to know if you have input into the artwork that's done on the cover of your book, and if so, was there a meaning behind that particular piece that's on the cover of that book? And my other question is, thinking of the out-of-body subject, do you ever have people that talk to you about these out-of-body experiences in conjunction with bilocation? In other words, they're out of their body in a waking state and actually feel as if they're in two places at the same time. Thank you.
Go ahead, Preston.
Okay, I'll answer the first question first. The cover for Out-of-Body Exploring, I did not have input into it. The publishers did it themselves, but... It shows people, trails of people going out of their body and up and towards the astral plane. So it's a pretty cover, but I did not have input into it. But as far as a bilocation, that's a very interesting phenomena. What's really interesting is when you start having out-of-body experiences, it feels like bilocation because you're in a duplicate dream body and you can explore the physical world or the other dimensions. If you get really good at it, you can actually manifest physically in different places. And you can become aware not only while you're out of body, but you can become aware of two places at once. You can be aware of your physical body sleeping in bed and aware of your dream body that's out there exploring. And then if you're really good, you can actually wake up your physical body at the same time and move around while you're out of body. So it gets really complicated, and that's really advanced stuff by location. But a number of people could do it. There's saints who could do it. Robert Munro, he was an out-of-body explorer. He reported a few experiences like that. So it can be done.
Yeah, you know, contactees seem to possess a wealth of gifts. Have you run across that press? I mean, I have. I don't know if you have. That's why I was asking.
Run across what? I'm sorry?
Well, contactees... In all the years we've been doing this research, and with plus 7,000 cases now, we found that we've never met a contactee or an abductee that's not empathic. And a good probably half seem to possess a real aggressive telepathic ability. And I don't mean aggressive in a bad way. I just mean it's a very advanced for humans, I should say. If they were an alien, I might understand it, but they seem to have a very good handle on it. And they do seem to have a much better handle on things like accessing alternative data streams, we'll call them.
Right.
That could be anything from cosmic consciousness to other dimensions, but they do seem to possess this ability, much more so than you'll find in everyday citizens of planet Earth. Have you run into that?
Absolutely. I started noticing that when the UFO witnesses told me, you know, I see ghosts too and I have dreams that come true. And they told me, you know, about out-of-body experiences, and I don't know why, but I somehow think that the ETs are really attracted to people who are more psychically aware, or more spiritually evolved, or perhaps in some way they awaken these abilities in people as well, or, you know, both. But for some reason, you know, there is a connection there.
Yeah, I would think part of it is that most of the ETs we hear speak communicate in a telepathic form. So I guess if they're communicating with you in a telepathic form and you're answering them back, I guess you're developing these abilities during your contact and abduction. Now, I don't know how much of this could be from them messing with DNA or just simply teaching each generation from that family, because there's several generational cases we're working on right now. And, you know, where we have five, six of them. I think six is what we have right now, is the longest six generations in one family of contactees.
Wow.
And I know we have two or three fives and then a couple fours and all, but this is something we've been working on for the last 4 years solid now, and because we just lucked up and got these groups. One of these groups, as a matter of fact, is long-term, but you get some interesting information from them, and you can see the progression in these abilities through the family from great-great-grandmother all the way down to great-great-granddaughter. And it's interesting, and it's not just females, some of them are males, but you can actually see the progression. And then you can see brothers and sisters displaying similar abilities and then yet different abilities as well. It's very, very fascinating. I mean, I don't know if this is an intentional thing. I would like to think this is an intentional thing on the extraterrestrials' part. At this point, that would be speculation. There is some evidence to back that up due from what contactees tell us, but still, it would be speculation. But, I mean, you've run across similar things, haven't you?
Oh, absolutely. You know, a lot of the people that I've talked to who have had really extensive experiences, the ones who get the most out of it are the ones who face their fear and become conscious during their experiences. And they start getting a lot of spiritual information about how to heal, how to travel out of body, how to do clairvoyance and even telekinesis and really, you know, levitation, that type of thing. So absolutely, yeah.
Well, on that note, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a quick break, so everyone to please stay tuned to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust radio production, now being broadcasted live in SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa. I'm your host, Joe Montaldo. We're sitting and speaking with Preston Dennett, and as soon as we return, we'll start taking some more questions, so please stay tuned.
This internet station sounds great on your computer, but wouldn't it be even better if you could take it with you wherever you go? Now you can. This station is proud to be affiliated with the Mobile Broadcast Network, brought to you exclusively by XS Voice. They make it possible for you to hear your favorite internet station anytime, anywhere, on your cell phone. To get connected, go to www.mynbn.com and listen to internet radio on the go.
SRN 1690 AM Riverside, Iowa, and around the world on the Stardust Radio Network. www.stardustradio.com.
We're talking with Paul Dow of Timeshares Only. Paul, I hear you're giving people the secrets to selling their timeshares, and now you're also giving them a free $500 shopping spree. Is that right?
That's right. A $500 shopping spree just for posting your property with Timeshares Only.
And that's in addition to learning the secrets and turning your timeshare into cash?
Learn the secrets, get cash, plus get a $500 free shopping spree when you post your property.
So that's like a triple bonus. How can you lose?
You can't. There are over 10 million people out there looking to buy a timeshare, and nobody can connect them with your property better than Timeshares Only.
And you get a $500 shopping spree free.
And if you call now, we'll also tell you the secrets to selling your timeshare free.
That could all add up to big money. So call 1-800-921-0869. That's 1-800-921-0869.
If our consultants are busy, please keep calling.
Call now, 1-800-921-0869. That's 1-800-921-0869.
If you're one of the millions of Americans that suffers from acne or knows a friend or a loved one suffering, please turn up your radio and take down this life-changing information. Introducing Epiclear, the revolutionary new advanced skin treatment imported from Europe, formulated to help get rid of pimples and prevent further breakouts. Great for all ages and most skin irritations, Epiclear is doing something that no other acne treatment formula has ever done. Ever. We're so confident that Epiclear will clear up your skin that we're willing to let you try it for free. That's right, you heard free, and we mean free. Over a $70 value delivered without a prescription right to your house.
Call now while free supplies last at 1-800-656-5993. Nothing to risk and everything to gain. Call Epiclear at 1-800-656-5993. That was 1-800-656-5993. Limit one order per household, please. Call 1-800-656-5993. Shipping and handling not included.
Alexis Parkin, your aviation destination.
You need something grand, something special, something unique. Look no further than the Alexis Parkin of Iowa City. There you'll find 27 supersized suites of all varieties, most with jacuzzis. The Alexis Park Inn is an aviation-themed hotel where your continental breakfast is delivered right to your door because they're committed to your satisfaction. Give the Alexis Park Inn a call toll-free at 888-9-ALEXIS or check out alexisparkinn.com.
Alexis Park Inn, your aviation destination. Alexis Park Inn.
SRN
1690 AM Riverside, Iowa, and around the world on the Stardust Radio Network. www.stardustradio.com.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust Radio production, now being broadcasted live on SRN 1690 Riverside, Iowa. Remember, ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to use a toll-free number, it is 1-877-213-4329. Again, 1-877-213-4329. Feel free to pick up the phone, make a call. Also, I want you to welcome back Preston Dennett. He's been doing good with you all tonight. He hasn't wanted to slap anybody. And Jeff's informed me that we have John Cools on the line from the Netherlands. John, can you hear me? John? Oh, maybe not. Okay, John, can you hear me? No? Oh, just lost him. A little flaky connection between he and the Netherlands. Well, he'll probably call back, so. That was kind of weird. You know, I was harassing Preston at the break, y'all. You know how I am. You know, I'm always pumping the guests and information at the breaks. Because they can't hear Preston, so they don't know what we were talking about. We could have been talking about naked women. They would have never known. I'm just kidding, ladies and gentlemen. That is not what we were talking about, so don't not email me on this. Oh, man. Are you ready for some more questions, Preston?
I sure am.
Okay, I see we have TRMT-137. TRMT, why don't you come up, give us your first name and location, and you're live in the air with Preston Dennett.
Good evening, gentlemen. Trace from Massachusetts. Mr. Dennett, during your OVEs and lucid dreaming experiences, did you ever sense the presence of ETs? And if so, did you think the ETs were attempting to manipulate the OVE or lucid dream experience? Thank you for your response.
Go ahead, Preston.
Yeah, I have had a couple. There was one time where I called out. I said, I popped out of my butt and I called out, I want to see an ET. And it was kind of, you know, a projection. I'm not sure how real it was, but this ET ran by me, and it looked very strange, not like your typical gray. It had sort of a weird snout face, and its legs bent backwards, but it was basically humanoid. I couldn't tell you, you know, how real that was, though. But I did have another experience where I popped out of body, and I found myself inside a UFO. And it was very featureless inside, but it was sending down beams of light. I could see through the floor. And, but really, no, not a lot of, ET involvement in my OVEs. But basically because I really haven't explored that area.
You know, that's a good point, Preston. That reminds me of Darryl Sims, because I always pick on him because he tells me he stops his abduction, and I told him that's impossible and that ET wanted to stop. But anyway, make a long story short, you know, I was thinking, and I don't know how much you would want to get into your own personal experiences or how much you may actually have locked away somewhere that you don't know about, but I tell you, like I tell everybody else, be sure you want to know before you open those doors, because sometimes it's good stuff, sometimes it's not. So I just warn everybody, because we've learned over the years that there's particular patterns that contact runs in for most people, not everybody, but most people. And inside of those guidelines, there seems to be quite a lot of good stuff and quite a lot of unpleasant stuff, we'll say. Because it's not actually that it's evil. What they're doing, they don't consider themselves to be evil for what they're doing. Not even sure they have the same concept of good and evil as we do, because really, good and evil is a man-made concept, let's be honest about it. That is strictly a man-made concept. Because, you know, we can do this real quick. 911, horrific, disgusting, ungodly for us. Well, for about a third of the Muslim world, they thought it was just fantastic. So that's why I said good and evil is a man-made concept. So I'm not sure how E.T. exactly perceives it or what they actually perceive as good and evil. What do you think, Preston?
Well, you know, I think the problem is for a lot of, like, particularly the Greys, is they don't understand human emotions, and when people react in fear, they just got a job to do. They're very militaristic in some of these abductions. And again, there's no evidence of Nazi-like torture or anything like that. And most of the people I've talked to feel that the aliens are neutral, if anything. So I don't think that they're here to take over the planet, or I don't think they're evil. But again, I don't think they're here to save us. I don't think they really care about us in that way, the Greys, at least. I think that there are a lot of very benevolent ETs, but they don't intervene because obviously we have to take care of ourselves. I mean, can you imagine what a disaster official contact could be with ETs? Our whole culture would be overwhelmed. Our science, our religion, all of this would be transformed, and really, you know, it would be a big, big deal. But on the other hand, I think it's probably going to happen sooner than later. I think there will be official contact eventually.
Wait, well, we're going to get back into that because y'all heard that, ladies and gentlemen. How long have I been telling y'all that, okay, about it's not really that they're here to help us or to hurt us. They got their own agenda. Okay? No, really, I give them a hard time about that because it's something important to get across to people who are getting involved with this, to make them understand that this isn't necessarily about us. You know, unfortunately, we have egos and everything's about us, but in the grand scheme of the universe, not everything is about us. And that's just a point that needs to be put across, because if they wanted to conquer the planet, they could have done it easily 6,000 years ago with not any real headaches or problems. And they could have easily introduced advanced technologies into our society much sooner than they did, or we did. I'm not going to give them credit for that, but they didn't. So I do think, like Preston says, we pretty much have to stand on our own on most things. Who we got up next? John Cools. I see John Cools has his hand up. So, oh, I see John gave up on a toll-free number, going to try the virtual auditorium. John Cools, you got a question for us? Come on up. What's up? Well, come on up.
Wonderful show. This topic is very interesting. Preston Dennett, about out-of-the-body experience is something that I found very important. I have a question. Are people reporting interdimensional golden light beings or something similar, and also connected to that they receive strange symbols? And also I want to know if he knows about blue-white light protecting them, if he ever heard about that. That was it.
Yeah, Preston.
Okay, yeah, well, you know, out-of-body exploring is really an amazing subject because the astral dimensions are so vast. I mean, imagine sending a dozen people to Earth. You'd come up with a lot of different stories, and that's the case with astral explorations, and there are absolutely a lot of light beings. In fact, the higher you go in the dimensions, the more advanced spiritually these beings are, and some are composed of purely light. And they radiate love, and it's amazing to be in their presence. I mean, they're just obviously extremely spiritually advanced. And there are places you can go where you can sort of bathe in the white light, I guess you would call it, that's described by near-death experiencers. And so, yeah, there's all sorts of amazing dimensions and things that you can explore. And it's actually really easy to do, out-of-body exploring. It's not dangerous. Everyone does it every night. They just don't remember, and it's totally safe. There's no danger of getting possessed or anything like this. We all have this silver cord which attaches our astral body to our physical body, and we all have spirit guides that will guide us when we do this. So I recommend it. It's an amazing adventure. You can visit your deceased relatives, learn about your past lives, and it's amazing the things you can do.
You know, it is, too. I don't know. Everybody has a different way of explaining it. And then, because I hate to get into it because there's so many ways, and then I'm not sure if everybody's realizing what they're saying, but you know, I hear a lot of people describe out-of-body experiences, and sometimes I think that's what they're actually talking about, and sometimes I think they're talking about something entirely different. I think their dream state is making them think that they're having an out-of-body experience, but that's not actually what it is. It's just hard to say because when they're describing it, it sounds like it just sounds like something entirely different than what it actually is. It's just one of those things that it's hard to describe. Because, you know, I have people like, they'll tell me, my contactees tend to get downloads. So when they get these downloads, it's not actually an abduction. It's actually more like download of data being getting brought in their head. But we'll get back to that in a minute. I see Jeff says we have Goss on the 800 line. So, David, can you hear me? Okay, maybe not. What was that? David, can you hear me okay?
Okay, can you guys hear me now?
Oh, yeah, go ahead. I got you now. Go ahead.
Okay, sorry. Mr. Dennett, good evening. My name is David Andrew. I'm calling from Arizona, and I'm the Arizona State Director for ICAR. I'm also a contactee, have been since about age 4 or 5, and I'm 44 now. And there was a particular encounter I had about 5 years ago, and I've had OBEs or out-of-body experiences before, and so I know what the experience is like. And during this encounter, a gray was next to my bed, and then I had an OBE, and I'm fairly certain that they initiated it, and I'm still not sure as to why. I was curious if you'd ever heard of any other cases like that or that happening to any other abductees or contactees, and why you think they may have done that. Thank you.
Okay, Chris.
Yeah, I have heard of that. It's actually not that uncommon. People will be pulled out of their body by ETs or will even have an out-of-body experience while they're physically on board this craft. And I think one of the reasons that these ETs are doing it is because they're not only interested in the physical body, they're interested in the astral body. We actually have 7 bodies, at least, the astral, the etheric, the causal, it goes on. And they know all about our bodies. They know much more about our physical bodies and our astral bodies than we do, most of us at least. And I believe that they are putting implants in, etheric implants and things like this, or just adjusting the energy field of people. This is how some people have reported being healed. They're taken out of their body and their astral body is healed and then put back in their physical body, which affects the physical healing. And one of the reasons I think they're doing this is, I mean, there's probably many reasons. I think that, again, they're very interested in waking people up spiritually. The number one experience people have on board a craft, according to Bullard, Thomas Bullard, who did a study, is the examination. But the second most common experience is warnings of ecological disaster and giving spiritual information and things like this. So there's a very positive side to this.
Actually, there seems to be a very positive side to a lot of this. Like I said, let me ask you this. I mean, how many, for you personally, how many cases have you run across that would say were good, bad, or indifferent, I guess I should ask?
You know, that's a trick question. You know, I always ask people how they feel about their encounters, and a lot of them have had very, very scary encounters, and but most of them tell me that they don't want these encounters to end. But like I said, the people who really have extensive encounters and work through them get an enormous amount of positive information and, you know, a real psychic boost, I guess you'd call it.
And it does. I mean, it seems to be, actually, it seems to be an amazing boost that these people are getting. And it does, it's just kind of amazing how all of this, it kind of pans out. What I find interesting, and we started doing this about 10 years ago, started working with contactees and teaching them how to use these psychic abilities to help their own personal lives. Not so much to discover the universe or anything like that, but more or less to help their own personal lives, you know, help their careers, help their family, things along those lines. And it seems like when these people really come to terms with this and really realize that this is actually a real phenomenon that's happening to them and these abilities are real, I mean, once they justify it into their own head that these abilities are real and they're willing to learn how to use them, I see that quite a few of them, their lives improve greatly. I mean, greatly, too. I mean, have you run across that?
Oh, yeah. One lady I know, she was having abductions by these gray-type ETs. She said it was horrible. She hated it. Finally, she just got fed up with the fear, and she says, I want to take control of the situation. And her encounters changed. They became very positive, and she was taught how to do healing. And at the time, she was a telephone operator. She had a bad job. She didn't enjoy it. As a result of her experience, she quit her job and became a healer and is now doing really well. And I've got a lot of cases like that where people just totally change their lives after an encounter as a result of, you know, their experiences.
And that seems to be true. I mean, it's weird how much this changes people's lives. You know, when you run across people like this, and I know this is kind of a loaded question, but do a lot of people you come across think this is other than, let's say, E.T.? Do they think maybe E.T. is God, or maybe this may be a demon or a God experience, something along those lines? I'm just curious.
You know, I do run across it occasionally. One lady, she had an encounter at the Marriott Hotel here in Woodland Hills, and she described this very skinny, short being with a very large head, which came into the room, and it was glowing. It came in a glowing red light, in a beam of red light, and she thought at first it was a demon. She could not move. She couldn't scream out. But it turns out, you know, it wasn't. She's had also UFO experiences, and I explained to her, you know, that there are differences. I think that there are, you know, evil spirits and things. I don't know if there's demons or not, but I think that it can be very confusing for people, especially if they're having, you know, poltergeist activity. It's hard for them to differentiate whether they're in a haunted house or experiencing UFO contact, or, you know, some people think it's angels or what have you, but I really think that ETs are, you know,
separate
from all this.
Hitler thought it was angels. Y'all read the book Mein Kampf, and that's what he thought it was, angels. He talked about these fair-haired, you know, blue-eyed, tall angels that told him what to do during the war, actually before the war as well. And in Hitler's own right, he was a genius. I mean, he created a lot of things and excelled his small little nation into almost conquering the world, even though he was partially insane, I'm sure. It just seems, though, you know, he talks about these contacts, and we've got evidence to suggest that Germany got made its first contact somewhere around 1905, 1900, somewhere around there. Because they were building saucers. Remember, their first prototype of a saucer rolled off the assembly line in 1913. And a fairly advanced prototype rolled off in 1917. And this isn't even classified information. This is something anybody can find out. It's just interesting, and he seemed to have some kind of contact. Yeah, it is kind of interesting, you know. Well, the reason I brought this up is because when I think about this, these are the human-type aliens that we talk about, that he was having contact with.
Right.
Now, here we have a man who seemed to, you know, change his country entirely, out of sheer will, actually. He seemed to have a grasp on technology. Remember, Germany was much more advanced than anybody else at the turn of the century, including the United States. The United States actually didn't pass Germany up in technology until after World War II, when we took half its scientists. Not to be ragging out on our own scientists, it's just Germany was more advanced, and it was and actually quite a bit more advanced when you get right down to it. And it just seems like they might have had a little help or a little edge that we didn't have at the time. We may have it now, but it didn't seem like we had it then. So, but getting back to the point, if this was true, and these aliens were intervening with Hitler and what he was doing, that's some down points for the human aliens right there.
Yeah, well, you know, it's possible he just got a hold of a UFO somehow.
And, well, he might have, but there's some documents that came out recently of contact before Hitler's regime. And then there was some other rumors about some contacts that, well, they tried to kill one or two of them. And then there seems to be some other stuff, and then there seems to be the human aliens that got involved. At first, it seems like they made contact with the Greys, because they were building saucers, and that's typically a Grey ship. And the humans didn't seem to intervene, I guess, until he took power. And then after that, a lot of things seemed to change. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know how much of this is right or wrong, guys, but you know, I listened to what he wrote. I read what he wrote, and he keyworded on about 36 keywords while he was writing this, which would put him in an abductee or contactee. You know, as far as we're concerned, he said enough keywords that he'd warrant a serious investigation. And then some of his statements suggesting godly contact really sounded a lot like extraterrestrial contact. So it just seemed like, I don't know if they were using him for a tool. It's hard to say what exactly happened here. Did the ETs intentionally push him in the directions that he went, or did he misread what they were saying because of the genetic experiments that aliens run? Did he just misread this and decide that all of his people needed to look like the aliens? I don't know. You know, this is speculation. What do you think, Preston?
I don't know. I don't know a lot about that, but I do know that there are human-looking ETs. Absolutely. I've interviewed a lot of people who've had encounters with ETs that look just like us and could pass on the streets easily. But most of these encounters have been very positive, I have to say. I mean, not at all like the Greys with examinations and things like that.
As long as you don't count the MIB experiences, they're positive.
That's
those
true.
The human aliens, by the way. So you got to be careful, ladies. That's what I'm saying. I've never found a group of aliens yet where they didn't seem to be both good and bad. Even the Greys. With the Greys, when you're dealing with the 3.5-footers, the 4-foot, look, guys, I'm going to be honest with you. Most of those experiences, it's not that they're going to be bad. They're just not going to be very pleasant experiences. When you start dealing with the 5- and 6-footers, the slender, kind of silverish, bluish ones, your experience has changed there. And that has to do more with age than anything else. We, you know, for us, we've learned a lot of things over the years. You know, contact experience for a child is one way. For a preteen is another way. From puberty to about age 28, 30, somewhere around there, is a particular type of experience, mainly dealing with experiments that have to do with breeding. After that, contact seems to change again. And this is pretty much true for all of them, because we can track, you know, pretty much all of these aliens and what they're doing as far as what the contactees tell us they're doing. So you see a lot of similarities, and a lot of it you don't. But I find that for almost all the contactees, after they've had this experience and they've come to term with it, usually they're in their 30s when this happens. They, first off, don't want the contact experience to stop. And secondly, have started taking a much more positive, the experience has taken a much more positive turn. See, I don't know if that's true for you and I, Preston. We've just actually broken down by ages over the last decade or so.
That's interesting. I haven't really thought about it that way, but I've got a lot of cases where ETs are interested in the whole breeding aspect. One lady, she told me about one night she woke up. She had just had a baby. Maybe it was a couple of weeks old, and she woke up, and there was this ET right outside the window trying to open it and get to her baby. And she instantly sat up, but at that exact moment, a force slammed her back down onto her bed, and this ET just stared at her baby for like 10 minutes and then finally walked off. And I've got a lot of cases like that where ETs show up right when someone has a baby. And I mean, one really interesting case, this lady was driving along, she was 8 months pregnant, due at any minute, and suddenly this ball of light starts flying around her car. And she was on a busy street, La Cienega, and suddenly there were no other cars there, and there's this giant, you know, basketball-sized ball of light trying to, you know, harass her, and it actually just went away. But so many cases where ETs are interested in, you know, the breeding aspect.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I see a question in the auditorium. It says, why do we think ET is up to anything but no good? If they were stand-up visitors, they would call and ask you if you wanted to be kidnapped first. Well, I agree that they should ask. I agree abductions are wrong. I'm not going to argue that point in any shape, form, or fashion. The thing about it is I think part, or at least two-thirds of this, the reason this is not an open, forward project, because a lot of humans would volunteer for this, by the way. I have no doubt about that at all from talking to contactees. I think, to be totally honest with you, it's the government that has asked them not to reveal themselves. Because when you do ancient studies, it seems like the aliens, all three for that matter, seem to move pretty much openly amongst the ancients. When you read Sumerian or Egyptian, Babylonian, the Dogon, the Aborigines, these aliens seem to move amongst the population. Okay, this was a common thing to be seen then. And it's in a lot of writings. today's society, of course, they call them different things. They didn't call them aliens, but, well, some of them call them star visitors like the Egyptians, but in today's society, if you walked out your house and it was a gray walking through town, you'd have a heart attack. Let's be honest about it, okay? We're actually a lot more educated, and we do understand what these things actually are. So, you know, that has a lot to do with what's going on in today, and I really think that has more to do with the government's control than anything else. But let's be honest, how many governments actually know the extraterrestrial secret? I guess that's a question in itself. And Preston?
Absolutely. You know, I don't know how deep our government's involved in the UFO situation. It's at least neck deep, though, and they've got a lot of covering up. I mean, it's been done. I have no doubt that they have the craft. I have no doubt that they know all about this whole UFO situation. But exactly who we're talking about, is it the senators, is it the president, or is it, you know, the generals, the military-industrial complex, MJ-12? You know, there's so much disinformation. It's a real mess.
I don't know. It is. It is a mess, and it does seem to be that there's a lot of covering up going on. You know, I found something interesting about decade, maybe 12 years ago, somewhere I had met someone, actually I think it was a little longer than that, but I had met somebody that said they worked for the government and they had critical information to the UFO ufology thing, and I was like, well, what is it, you know, and he's going on and on, I'm listening to him thinking, well, you know, you're probably just a nutcase bugging me and wasting my time, but he told me about this program called the desensitization program, where that the government was going to use mass media along with religion and a few other things to desensitize the U.S. population, for that matter, the world's population, to extraterrestrials. Well, I didn't actually understand what he was talking about at the time, and then he started laying it out for me, and the ways they were going to do it using cartoons and commercials and just a whole platitude of things. Well, here we are in the year 2006, and everywhere you look, there's extraterrestrial bumper stickers, little things, alien busters, alien commercials. Aliens are in everything. Alien keychains, just... It's festered in our society now, and we have come to be desensitized about that. But when we get from the break, I'll let you comment on that. But, ladies and gentlemen, we got to take a break, so I want everyone to please stay tuned to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust Radio production, now being broadcasted live on SRN 1690, Riverside, Iowa. I'm your host, Joe Montalvo. I'm sitting and speaking with Preston Dennett, and as soon as we return, we'll start taking some more questions, so please stay tuned.
This internet station sounds great on your computer, but wouldn't it be even better if you could take it with you wherever you go? Now you can. This station is proud to be affiliated with the Mobile Broadcast Network, brought to you exclusively by XS Voice. They make it possible for you to hear your favorite internet station anytime, anywhere, on your cell phone. To get connected, go to www.mymbn.com and listen to internet radio on the go.
We're here today with Paul Dow of Timeshares Only, and Paul, you've got some terrific news for timeshare owners.
That's right. In the next 6 months, over $3.5 billion of timeshares will be sold.
So this is the perfect time to sell.
Exactly, which is why you need to get your property into our network, and if you call us right now, you'll also get a $500 shopping spree absolutely free.
$500 free?
Yes. Just for posting your property with Timeshares Only. And when you do sell your property, you'll get cash. It's a double bonus. You can't lose.
Except if I don't call.
Hey, over 10 million people will be looking to buy a timeshare. So we need your property now.
The number to call now is 1-800-921-0866. That's 1-800-921-0866. Turn your timeshare into cash and get a free $500 shopping spree.
And if our lines are busy, please keep calling.
That number again for timeshares only is 1-800-921-0866. That's 1-800-921-0866.
This is Dan Hall from No More Waiting, the folks that get structured settlement holders their money now. So right now, call us at 800-768-6286. Got an insurance settlement that's taking years to pay out, but you want your money now? No More Waiting is for you. You're in the third year of a 20-year settlement, but you want a new car or a new home now? No More Waiting is for you. Need to catch up on bills now? No More Waiting is for you. Call 800-768-6286. Want answers about your settlement payments now, No More Waiting is for you. In fact, No More Waiting has prepared a DVD chock full of information to help you get the most money for your settlement payments. Call today. It's free and there's no obligation. Call 800-768-6286. That's right, for your free DVD. Just call 800-768-6286 for your free quote, your free DVD, and your path to financial freedom. Call No More Waiting at 800-768-6286 now.
Alexis Parkin, your aviation destination.
You need something grand, something special, something unique. Look no further than the Alexis Parkin of Iowa City. There you'll find 27 supersized suites of all varieties, most with jacuzzis. The Alexis Park Inn is an aviation-themed hotel where your continental breakfast is delivered right to your door because they're committed to your satisfaction. Give the Alexis Park Inn a call toll-free at 888-9-ALEXIS or check out alexisparkinn.com.
Alexis Park Inn, your aviation destination. Alexis Park Inn.
SRN
1690 AM Riverside, Iowa, and around the world on the Stardust Radio Network. www.stardustradio.com.
Good evening and welcome back to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust Radio production. Now being broadcasted live on SRN 1690 Riverside, Iowa. I'm your host, Joe Montalva. I'm sitting and speaking with Preston Dinette. And remember, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to use the toll-free number, it is 1-877-213-4329. Again, 1-877-213-4329. Pick up the phone, give us a call. You know, there's just so much stuff. Oh, well, you know what, Preston? Remember what I was talking about before the break?
Right, desensitizing people?
Yeah, desensitizing the population. What do you think? I mean, because we've been tracking it for a while just to see how accurate this guy was, because he had actually given us some pretty in-depth information. And so far, I hate to say it, if you go decade by decade, he has been right on the money. He even predicted, well, he didn't even predict it. He actually said this is where the poll numbers will be at each one of these decades. And he's got the poll being taken in 2010 with almost 70% of Americans having no doubt that this planet's being visited. And right now he had 2000 at 50%, and that's where it was. But go ahead, Preston.
Well, you know, I can believe it. There's no doubt. I mean, it's permeated our society on every aspect. I was over at a friend's house, and a kid came running in. He says, I'm going to go over to Area 51 and start shooting aliens. I turned to my friend, I'm like, what is he talking about? It turned out it's an arcade called Area 51. So they're getting to the kids, definitely in the cartoons and stuff like this. But is it planned? I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say how much this is just a sort of a natural progression, I think, of, you know, a result of all the contact going on, or whether it's a government plan. Because there's always been rumors of our government going to come clean and make the official announcement that UFOs are real. I mean, that was rumored long before I even got involved in the subject, and you hear it pretty much every year. Oh, it's right around the corner. They're going to, you know, make the disclosure. And it hasn't happened yet. Maybe there is a plan, but you know, I'm waiting.
if he's correct, and I interpreted it correctly, he's saying somewhere around 2050. But get this. This is another thing that's interesting. He said things like we were going to build, actually he called them rovers too, by the way, and that we would find things on Mars that would suggest, he said we would find water on the moon and on Mars. He was correct on both. He also said that we would find things on Mars that would suggest that there's probably life on Mars. Now, he wasn't talking about intelligent life. He was talking about just life, some type of biological life on Mars. Both NASA and the European Space Agency do think we're going to find some type of life on Mars. They're almost 99% positive now. He said the next step after that would be that SETI would get a signal that could not be refuted as an intelligent signal source. Not something we could communicate back with, but something along those lines. And then he said the next step would actually be a contact situation. But not like we're thinking where the government comes out and discloses all the information that they've accumulated over the years. It will be more like a first contact experience. And that's how they would treat it, and that's how the government would treat it until such a time that they can anymore. But so far, he's been right on the money. and it is freaky, and I'm not a big conspiracy thing, nut, because I really don't like conspiracies of any kind, but he just seems to be right on, and it's hard, you know, not to take it to heed, because some of the events that he's got listed and shifted in there were very interesting. And he also said that there would be, starting around, I think it was 1998 or 1997, that there would start being sightings of greys and reptilians inside of city boundaries. Now, when I read that, I was like, yeah, whatever, this guy's lost his mind. I swear that's what I said when I read it. And lo and behold, we've had several reports now. It only seems to be in areas where there's been, like New Orleans or India, where the tsunami hit, but it seemed to be in areas like this. But we do have seven reports now of actually interaction of extraterrestrials in these areas. So that's even tracking to what he said. So it's just one of those interesting things. Kind of worries me a little bit, because he seemed to think that the extraterrestrials didn't have our best benefit at heart. Whether or not that's true, I don't know. I judge everything by actions. There's not an alien on this planet that is not guilty of abduction, okay? And that isn't wrong any way it goes. In this country, if you abducted someone from another country, that's enough to start a war, okay? We've actually gone to war over people taking our people, all right? So the thing about it is, you know, all of them are guilty of that. So knowing that tells you right off they have an interest in this, but what it is, I guess, we'll have to wait and see what the final outcome is. But what do you think, Preston? I mean, how long do you think this contact has been permeating through our societies?
Well, you know, it seems to me that it did start in the 1940s, at least with the Greys. I mean, if you look back through all the mythology and, you know, the elves and the fairies and all that, there's nothing like what's going on now. It's just, there's no parallel. I think that this is pretty much a modern phenomenon.
Oh, I got some text for you to read then.
I mean, at least as far as the Greys abducting us, you know.
We actually have in Egyptian hieroglyphs of the Greys, the actual Greys, pictures of them, and their ship. We also have them in the Dogon Society along with the reptilians and in the Aborigine Society, which date back much older than most of the what we call pre-modern societies.
So well, maybe they've been manipulating us since Neanderthal times, and, you know, genetically, the whole genetic theme goes way, way back, right?
Well, they seem to be doing this. Yeah, they seem to be. I'm not exactly sure why. I mean, there's a lot of speculation why a project would take so long. I mean, we're talking, if we talk just the Sumerian time, we're talking 6,000 years. If we want to go back past that to that all-famous 12,500 years ago, which seems to be a keystone date for some reason, then we'd have to wonder, you know, what's taking so long? What is it they're after that takes 6,000 to 12,000 years? And if we talk about Neanderthal or Cro-Magnon, since we do have cave drawings of what we see, saucers hovering over herds of buffaloes and deers in both Europe and the United States, then we would have to think, Jesus, 50,000 years, I mean, what are they doing? What form of evolution? It can't be forced evolution because it wouldn't take 50,000 years. So there has to be something else going on. It cannot be just about evolving humans. It has to be something else that we just don't know or we just don't understand. But I can't see what else it could be. What do you think, Preston?
Well, you know, it's hard to say. I think that the fact that there's been this long history says a lot about human origins and, you know, evolution. I mean, there are ETs that look just like us, so what does that mean? And people have been told by the ETs that they are related to the ETs. So, no doubt ETs are very interested in us, but I'm not so sure that we're not ET-related ourselves. So that might be part of the reason.
I would actually agree with that. I'd have to say that we're probably related. But I see Kevin's been having his hand up, so we're going to grab poor Kevin. Kevin284, I see you've been patiently waiting. I didn't forget about you. I've just been babbling. Why don't you come up, give us your location, and you're live and on air with Preston Dennett.
Thanks, Joe, and you have a great guest on. I was wondering, how come the UFOs, how come they don't land in like a football stadium or stadiums? I mean, and walk around their ship and get back into it. And that's when there's a game going on. I mean, the government is trying to hide so much, but when you see so many people seeing one and the aliens walking around it, I mean, there would be all positive. That's all I have to say.
I would. Can I answer that?
Yeah, go ahead, Preston. Yeah.
You know, I agree. Why don't they? I mean, they could easily convince the world with one simple encounter by landing in a football field that's filled with people. And they haven't done that yet, and I think the main reason is because each time that they do these really public displays, we react in a way that's pretty hostile. I mean, we scramble planes after them. We've shot at UFOs many times. I think that there is sort of a plan on the UFO's side to sort of expose themselves more and more. And this is why we have these major UFO waves like Gulf Breeze or Hudson Valley or the Topanga Canyon wave or Mexico City. The Phoenix Lights, that's a perfect example. Thousands of people saw that. Thousands of people called the police. It was on videotape. It was photographed numerous times. This is a perfect case of ETs wanting to be seen. Normally, they're very, very evasive. They don't want to be seen, except in these waves. So they're putting on a publicity campaign. There's no doubt in my mind that that's exactly what they're working up towards, is being able to land in a public place without us attacking them. I think the only reason they're not doing it is because we're so warlike, our race, humanity is. I mean, we always have wars going on this planet. We shoot at people just because of the color of their skin. And, you know, I think they're afraid of us, in a sense. So they're just working, hoping that we become more civilized and waiting for that moment until they make official contact.
Well, they probably have a reason to be scared of us. When I hear every now and then, we take pot shots at them. What was that, STS-81? Which was STS? Well, anyway, there was one of them where you actually see this thing, the UFOs minding its own business, kind of cruising across the top of the planet. You know, I don't know what it was doing. It was just cruising along. All of a sudden, you see this bolt coming up, of white coming up from the surface. I don't know if it was a missile or a laser or what it was. You see it coming up. This thing stops and just takes off in the other direction. So I'm thinking to myself, okay, guys, we're shooting at aliens that can traverse time and space. It's not really a bright thing to do, ladies and gentlemen. I don't see how we could win this, so I don't know why we're going to take pot shots at them. Unless our government knows there's not going to be a retaliation, and how could they know that? What do you think, Preston?
Well, I think the military is convinced, or at least some of them, that the ETs are hostile, probably because they keep hovering over our nuclear bases and turning off, you know, the missiles and things like this. But I don't think that's necessarily a hostile action. You can interpret it different ways. They may be concerned that we're going to destroy ourselves. And I don't know, they may have painted themselves into a corner of the military. And, or, you know, it's hard to say what exactly, how they feel about it. But,
Well, you're right. I mean, like when they turned those silos off, it might have just been a little slap on the wrist to say, hey, look, guys, we understand that y'all have nukes, but they don't scare us. You know, so, well, matter of fact, we'll show you, look, we're not even scared a little bit of your nukes. I mean, it might have been something as simple as that, just kind of a little warning to let them know, look, guys, it ain't going to happen. I don't know if they would actually intervene if someone was to launch nukes on the planet. I mean, they didn't in World War II, so I don't know. And we know there was a lot of them flying around because of the Foo Fighters, but I don't know if they would actually intervene on that. But someone had just sent me an instant message asking, what do you consider your most interesting UFO case to be?
Okay, well, probably, you know, I love the onboard cases. One of the most interesting cases was this gentleman who contacted me, and he had an experience where he spent like 6 hours on board a UFO. And he was actually driving along with his mother and his brother when suddenly this giant UFO showed up and cast a beam of light down the car, and he was sucked up inside the craft. And he didn't actually remember this for years. until, you know, just recently, like 5 or 10 years ago, he spontaneously recalled it without hypnosis. And he recalled being taken up into this giant craft. He said it was absolutely huge, like a small building. It was all bronze colored inside. And he was laid out on a table. He was examined. There was a bunch of different beings there, which he couldn't really describe. He said he was kind of too afraid to look at them at this point, at least. He doesn't remember. But he described a lot of experiences. They put something in his mouth. They put something in his leg. They put all these symbols into his mind and mathematics and stuff, which he said most of it went right over his head. At one point, they took him to another room and sort of dangled him below the craft as they sucked electricity out of power lines. So he saw that whole process, and they explained to him how they do that. And it was a really interesting experience. Some of it he doesn't recall, but afterwards he got a lot of physical proof. I mean, he went to the doctor, and there was these pins in his leg that shouldn't have been there, a metal object, I mean. And also in his mouth, there was a foreign object in his mouth, which they did not know what it was. So it was a real interesting case, but it's hard to depict just one. I mean, there's so many.
But yeah, I know it is. It's tough when you get into it, too, which ones could be fairies. I mean, because a lot of stuff we do, a lot of these cases seem to be very similar, or at least my interest in them seem to be about the same, or what I'm learning from them. Some cases are not as good as others, but yeah, I mean, it's hard to pick. It's hard to pick what's, somebody asked me the other day, I'm going to ask you this question too, and here we go, put you on the spot again. As far as contactees go, or people who have been abducted, what do you think is the best thing they can take away from this experience? And while you're thinking about it, what do you think is the worst thing they can take away from this experience?
Want me to answer that now?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, I'm going to let you. You can just kind of mill it around in your head, too. It's a tough question, because when I think about it, there's a lot of good things that come out of contact, and picking one is not a lot easy of a thing. And then there are some bad things. But, what you think?
Well, I think probably one of the worst things people can take away from it is the fear and victim mentality and sort of actually bad health. There are some cases where people are truly, victimized.
Yeah, it's true.
But on the other hand, there are some really, really great things people can get out of this, which a real psychic boost, I think, is one of the best things. Healings. I know people who have been healed of terminal conditions. And I think the knowledge of having had that experience is awesome.
Yeah, I know. Knowledge is a good thing. Let's be honest. Hey, if you can get it, if you can get ET to give it to you. I mean, one of the things we teach them, we actually give contactees. We work with them and set up a line of questioning that they could ask extraterrestrials. Now, we don't expect everyone to get it, and we don't expect everyone to be able to talk to an ET, but it's encoded into their subconscious, so anytime they're communicating on telepathic communication, and we learned this from the Grays and humans, that if it's programmed into them, a lot of times they will answer the question out of habit, because they're just hearing it, or seeing it, however exactly they're communicating, but they seem to be picking this image up, and then transmitting back the answer to the contactee. Now, how much do you think we should actually believe an extraterrestrial alien, regardless what kind it is?
They're awfully deceptive sometimes. I know one couple who I wrote about, they were driving through Arizona when they had a missing time encounter. And under hypnosis, they recalled being invited aboard this craft by human-looking ETs. And they asked a lot of questions, and the ETs answered them. They said the ETs told them that they were contacting people who are helping humanity, but they can only do so much without, intervening too much. And the lady asked, "Well, where do you come from?" And the ET just kind of cocked his head and said, "We come from a place you don't know about yet." So yeah, they're pretty deceptive. And I think if you look at a lot of contactee stories, ETs will actually plant some disinformation, saying they come from Mars or Venus or something to sort of give people who are skeptical a way out, almost. so that they don't have to believe it. But I think for the most part, people are just going to have to use their own intuition. And how much can you trust what another person says? If you get to know a person, an ET even, well, I think you can really begin to get a sense of whether or not they're telling the truth.
Yeah, and I do. And you know, we have what we like to call, there's, you know, different levels of contact with different stages of humans that work with them, and what they call keepers that seem to be, I don't want to say working along the alien agenda line. They're just more along cooperating with the aliens, especially when it comes to bringing on other humans on board and dealing with them. But these guys and girls seem to get very pertinent information, information that other contactees don't seem to get. And it's almost like it's a reward of some kind, for a lack of a better way of explaining it. But it does seem to be there. But, you know, ET does lie, and I've said that 100,000,000,000 times. I don't know if it's an intentional lie, but they do lie. And they do seem that, in all honesty, extraterrestrials seem like they're interested in a particular segment of this population on this planet. They seem to track us through DNA, and they seem to be concerned with the DNA and the breeding process. All I can think is maybe 10,000, 50,000, 60,000, whatever it was, one, two, three, or maybe all three of these aliens may have introduced their DNA into our society. Might be one of the reasons they're so interested to see how our evolution is going to be. A cross between the three of us means at some point along the line we should excel them, so maybe that's why they're interested in us.
I mean, why wouldn't we be surprised if they're incarnating into human form?
It may
and that's
be.
Why a lot of these people are having experiences, is because they are ETs.
They might be. It's hard to say, but there seems to be a definitely family progression. Like I said, we're working generational cases now, but we have cases where there's actually journals going back to 250, 300 years where this has still been going on in the family. So, I mean, we can actually show 300 years of contact.
Is that right? Wow, that's amazing. That's, I haven't heard more than like three or four generations.
Hell, we got six in one family. I mean, in one family, right? See, the thing of it is no one really ever approached abductions and research the way we did. We decided a long time ago that we were going to first off talk to as many contactees and abductees as we can, and then we formulated what we like to call abduction criteria, so that we'd have, because we were going through so many people, you know, to make it easier for the new people coming in, there had to be some guidelines, keywords, certain things that they should know about contacts, things that are prevalent, descriptions of aliens that, you know, when, you know, we'll have 500 people contact the organization in a year, and out of that 500, 200 may give an identical description of a gray or a human or a reptilian, amphibian, because they're not really reptilians, but they may actually give a very accurate description. And none of the stuff we've published, and probably never will, and for the simple fact that we'll never know who's lying or telling the truth. But now, you know, we always say 7,000 cases, but that's not even a fair estimate. I mean, that's what we consider pertinent cases that have been investigated. If you go by everything we've done on the internet and the shows and everything else, that number's probably triple that. And there's no one really ever done this before on a mass scale like we have. So for us, it's much different. We're getting information on a daily basis from, you know, a bunch of different sources every day. And we track not just families, but individual contactees on a daily basis, plus with the support groups. They can come in anytime they feel like and report what's going on in their contact, what's going on in their lives. It's just a whole new way of doing research, and it seems to be panning out in a way that none of us expected. You know, as far as, you know, we sat down at one of the conferences and discussed this with Bud Hopkins and David Jacobs. If you took all of their research and combined it along with J.L. and Hynek and about another dozen UFO abduction researchers, they still wouldn't even have a third of the cases that we've reviewed. And it's hard for us these days, because what I find interesting is people like yourself, Yvonne Smith, Mary, seem to be coming up with the same conclusions we are. Now, I expect that they'll come up with some of the other conclusions we do when they get an X amount of cases in their thing, and you should be getting pretty close to that. But it's just weird to watch. I mean, the more cases you get, the more information you get, the more people you have doing this for you, you know, as far as contactees go every day, you know, reporting what they see, what they experience, what they understand, the more data you can assimilate, the better hypothesis you come up with. You know, these days, we'll tell a contactee. We can tell them a lot of stuff that's going to happen. Long before it happens in their abduction, we can even give them ideas on routines and the way it's going to work and on particular things that are going to be done to them. And it prepares them for it. It makes it much easier than it will for anything else. But that's enough of that babbling. I know we're getting short on time here. So, Preston, I want to tell you, man, you did great tonight. You kind of laid back, enjoyed yourself, didn't let the audience bug you. But I want to thank you for being on tonight.
Oh, thank you. My pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
Well, be sure to tell them how they get in touch with you. Give them the websites. Tell them where the books are at. Give them a quick rundown. I know you got 10 of them, so give them a quick rundown on them. And then, and again, I want to thank you for being on the show.
Okay, yeah. My first book is UFO Healings, 100 Cases of People Who've Been Healed by UFOs. My second book is 1 in 40, The UFO Epidemic. That's 40 cases of all types. UFOs Over Topanga Canyon is about a wave of sightings over Topanga Canyon. It's really my most exciting book. My fourth book is Extraterrestrial Visitations. That's 10 cases of very close contact, you know, abductions, that type of thing. UFOs Over California is a true history of UFOs over the Golden State. I've got other books, one about ghosts, one about out-of-body exploring. Supernatural California, that's my latest book. That's a guidebook to all the supernatural spots here in California. So you can look at all these books on my website, which is actually my name, PrestonDennett.com. That's D as in David, E-N-N-E-T-T. And they're available at Amazon.com. I've got excerpts on the website, and I'm adding to it all the time. And I've got more books coming out, another one called A UFO Incident on Coronado Island. I'm really excited about this one.
Oh, well, let me know. When you get it out, send me a copy. We'll get you in the show and talk about it, man. I don't get to do near the reading I used to like to, and thank God my wife reads because she can keep me up to speed on a lot of stuff because, man, these days I never have any free time. But again, Preston, I want to tell you thanks for being on the show, man. You did a great job. I appreciate you coming on. Let me know when it's coming out. I'll get Linda to get in touch with you, and we'll get you scheduled when it comes out, and you can let everybody know it's been released and tell them a little bit about it and where to find it. So again, man, thanks for coming on. Ladies and gentlemen, next week, Marshall Summers should be an interesting show. A couple of things before we part out of here. Guys, remember, speak your mind, especially when it comes to space program, all right? Just come on. Spending a couple of $1 trillion on going to Mars. You know, let's go the way we want to for a change, all right? On that note, ladies and gentlemen, I want to tell everybody thanks for tuning in to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust radio production, now being broadcasted live in SRN in 1690, Riverside, Iowa. I'm your host, Joe Montaldo, and until next week, have a good evening.
If you would like to continue this discussion after the show, join us in ICAR's Pal Talk chat room, UFO Alien Phenomenon, under the Social Issues category.
Is life moving too fast? If you're self-employed or a small business owner, you have no choice but to move as fast as you can. Sometimes you move so fast you don't take a close look at life's details. When was the last time you looked at your health insurance? If you don't have health insurance or if you have the wrong coverage, serious medical bills could mount up. That's where the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company comes in. We provide affordable health insurance for the self-employed and small business owners. If you don't have health insurance, call us. If you have coverage, call anyway. See if we can give you better coverage at a better price. Stay on track for affordable health insurance designed specifically for the self-employed and small business owners.
Call 877-735-6460. That's 877-735-6460. Home office located in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states and benefits may vary by state. Association membership may not be required to obtain insurance. Call 877-735-6460 for details.
What's happening? I'll tell you what. Kent Emmons here. How'd you like to spend a weekend in Branson for only $99? That's right. You and your family can now relax in Branson for only $99 or take the honey for a quick romantic getaway any weekend you choose. This amazing vacation offer includes 3 days, 2 nights in a great hotel, breakfast every morning of your stay, preferred show tickets, and hundreds of dollars in coupon savings all around town. You know, Branson, Missouri's got amusement parks, world-class golfing, beautiful lakes, endless shopping, and more live shows than Vegas. So give us a call now at 1-866-338-1410. Branson for $99. It's our way of saying thanks for checking out our beautiful new resort, the Grand Crown. Here's that number again, 1-866-338-1410. Toll free, 1-866-338-1410. Branson for $99.
Climate change could affect our way of life. Reduce your greenhouse gas emissions and help control climate change. Visit www.vcr-mvr.ca. Brought to you by the Voluntary Challenge and Registry, Climate Change Central, and this radio station.
SRN 1690 AM Riverside, Iowa, and around the world on the Stardust Radio Network. www.stardustradio.com.